In today's story from the book of Daniel, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah have a death sentence over their head. An edict has been issued by evil King Nebuchadnezzar that all the wise men of Babylon be cut into pieces and their houses turned into piles of rubble. We wonder why in the world Daniel and his companions would be subject to this edict, for they were just young men, hardly past boyhood. Why would God, to whom they were devoted, and for whose sake they were committed to keeping the faith and practices of their Jewish people while living in pagan Babylon in captivity, why would God let such a terrible thing happen to them? There's an answer to that question, as we shall see, but first we need to know the backstory behind this hair-raising turn of events. We read the first part of this incredible story in the life of Daniel and his friends in Daniel chapter 2, verses 1 through 28. In the second year of his reign, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams. His mind was troubled, and he could not sleep. So the king summoned the magicians, enchanters, sorcerers, and astrologers to tell him what he had dreamed. When they came in and stood before the king, he said to them, "I have had a dream that troubles me, and I want to know what it means." Then the astrologers answered the king, "May the king live forever. Tell your servants the dream, and we will interpret it." The king replied to the astrologers, "This is what I have firmly decided. If you do not tell me what my dream was and interpret it, I will have you cut into pieces and your houses turned into piles of rubble. But if you tell me the dream and explain it, you will receive from me gifts and rewards and great honor. So tell me the dream and interpret it for me." Once more they replied, "Let the king tell his servants the dream, and we will interpret it." Then the king answered, "I am certain that you are trying to gain time because you realize that this is what I have firmly decided. If you do not tell me the dream, there is only one penalty for you. You have conspired to tell me misleading and wicked things, hoping the situation will change. So then, tell me the dream, and I will know that you can interpret it for me." The astrologers answered the king, "There is no one on earth who can do what the king asks. No king, however great and mighty, has ever asked such a thing of any magician or enchanter or astrologer. What the king asks is too difficult. No one can reveal it to the king except the gods, and they do not live among humans." This made the king so angry and furious that he ordered the execution of all the wise men of Babylon. So the decree was issued to put the wise men to death, and men were sent to look for Daniel and his friends to put them to death. When Arioch, the commander of the king's guard, had gone out to put to death the wise men of Babylon, Daniel spoke to him with wisdom and tact. He asked the king's officer, "Why did the king issue such a harsh decree?" Arioch then explained the matter to Daniel. At this, Daniel went into the king and asked for time so that he might interpret the dream for him. Then Daniel returned to his house and explained the matter to his friends Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. He urged them to plead for mercy from the God of heavens concerning this mystery, so that he and his friends might not be executed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. During the night, the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision. Then Daniel praised the God of heavens and said, "Praise be to the name of God forever and ever. Wisdom and power are his. He changes times and seasons. He deposes kings and raises up others. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to the discerning. He reveals deep and hidden things. He knows what lies in darkness, and light dwells with him. I thank and praise you, God of my ancestors. You have given me wisdom and power. You have made known to me what we asked of you. You have made known to us the dream of the king. Then Daniel went to Arioch, whom the king had appointed to execute the wise men of Babylon, and said to him, "Do not execute the wise men of Babylon. Take me to the king, and I will interpret his dream for him." Arioch took Daniel to the king at once and said, "I have found a man among the exiles from Judah who can tell the king what his dream means." The king asked Daniel, also called Belteshazzar, "Are you able to tell me what I saw in my dream and interpret it?" Daniel replied, "No wise man, magician, or diviner can explain to the king the mystery he has asked about. But there is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries. He has shown King Nebuchadnezzar what will happen in days to come." We'll pause at this point in the chapter to consider what we learn from this episode in Daniel's life. For one thing, we learn that the magicians, enchanters, sorcerers, and astrologers of Babylon were worthless to the king. As pagan idol worshipers, they were magicians who were involved in occult practices, enchanters who were experts in exorcisms, sorcerers cast spells, and astrologers were a class of priests who claimed to receive special knowledge through the stars. These men were the men that Babylon and its kings relied on to foretell the future and to influence such events as harvest, droughts, and battles. So why was the king so hard on the astrologers? Was it because the king sensed that this particular dream was more important than others he'd had? Was it perhaps because he wanted to test the interpreter's powers to tell him the dream itself before he would accept their interpretation of it? Maybe he had inherited these fortune tellers from the days when his father was king and for some reason had cause to doubt their abilities. What we do know is that King Nebuchadnezzar was inclined to sudden rages and harsh punishments, tendencies that were no doubt exacerbated by the fact that he couldn't recall his dream. All he could remember was only that it had left him very agitated. So truly he had nothing to tell the astrologers and magicians and sorcerers and enchanters who begged him for more time, hoping that perhaps with the passage of time, the king's memory would be jogged. And he could tell them what the dream was after all, and they'd have a shot at interpreting it, or at least concocting some kind of plausible explanation for it. Now, when Arioch came banging on his door to execute the king's order to cut him into pieces and to turn his house into rubble, we read that Daniel spoke to him with wisdom and tact. That in itself speaks volumes of Daniel's wisdom and maturity far beyond his years. Most people would have lost their cool and rather than speaking reasonably with Arioch, would have belligerently demanded why they were being unfairly lumped together with a bunch of loser wise men who didn't have a clue. And if that's how Daniel had reacted, we'd have had no trouble relating to him at all, would we? For when something unfair happens to us, isn't our initial reaction to get hot under the collar and want to give them the what for? And don't we then complain to whoever will listen, most especially to God, "Why is this happening to me? This isn't fair." And rather than inquiring as to the cause of the injustice with wisdom and tact like Daniel did, don't we often go on the attack instead? Not Daniel. He kept his cool. He held his tongue. He didn't rail against God or whine to others about the situation into which he had been so unjustly thrust. He didn't murmur or complain to God, saying, "Why are you allowing this to happen to us? We've been faithful to you. We've been in covenant with you. We've been doing what you've called us to do. How could you let this happen to us?" Daniel and his three companions didn't panic. They didn't fret. Don't we? When things go wrong, we so often get upset when our faith is challenged, when our emotions are upset and our world is turned upside down. We do well to model our reaction and our response after theirs, for it can prove a huge help when we find ourselves anxious and perplexed because the good times have turned into the wretched times. Rather than going off half-cocked as we are wont to do, Daniel listened patiently as Arioch explained the king's decree. Once he heard what was behind the king's decision to wipe out the wise men of Babylon, he went to the king to ask for time so that he might interpret the dream. Unlike the strategy employed by the Babylonian wise man, this wasn't a delaying tactic on Daniel's part, but a reflection of his profound confidence in God. The God who, as we learned in chapter 1, verse 17, had given Daniel the gift to understand visions and dreams of all kinds. Because Daniel trusted that it was the God of his fathers, not the king of Babylon, who truly held his life in his hands, he was able to boldly approach the king when his neck was on the line, not asking for time to stall like the other wise men, but for time to seek God's face. What about you? Is that your strategy when the going gets tough? To carve out time to seek God's face in prayer? That's what Daniel did, and amazingly, the king granted him leave. The very act of which not only says something about the esteem in which he held Daniel, it also says something about how desperate he was to discover what the dream was and what the dream meant, so much so that he'd even let a captured foreign Jewish teenager have a crack at it. Above all, however, it shows God's power to move others, even ruthless kings, to show favor to his children, including you and me. Have you ever had that experience when, with all apparent odds against you, someone you didn't think would help you did help you? When someone who didn't owe you any favors extended you a favor after all, and at just the right time and in just the right way? Don't dismiss the possibility that this was because God had moved their heart to show you favor. For this is something he most certainly can and often does in the life of those who believe in and trust in him, just as the life of Daniel and his friends proves. Praying for favor is something for which we as Christians can rightly pray, but not simply for our personal benefit or gain, but also for the benefit and gain of others and for the glory of God. That was the purpose for which God caused the king and Arioch to show Daniel favor, so that God himself might be revealed as the one true God, and the gods of Babylon revealed as worthless, and the wise men of Babylon revealed as charlatans. To this end, when Daniel returned to his house and explained the situation to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, he urged them to plead for mercy from the God of heaven concerning this mystery, so that he and his friends would not be executed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. Theirs wasn't a haphazard prayer. It wasn't an on-the-fly, off-the-cuff prayer. It wasn't a wing-in-a-prayer prayer. It was intentional prayer. intense and focused, sustained prayer. They prayed like this because a mystery was at stake. Mystery is a key word in the book of Daniel and throughout the Bible. It refers to the secret purposes of God, purposes that he reveals only to his chosen prophets and apostles, as Amos 3:7 says, "Surely the Lord God does nothing unless he reveals his secret to his servants, the prophets." Prophets such as Daniel. Together with his friends, Daniel prayed in earnest for God to make known to him what no man could know apart from divine revelation, the content of the dream and the interpretation of the dream. A dream that revealed God's secret purposes for King Nebuchadnezzar and Babylon, as well as for the future of world history and the unfolding drama of redemption. After hours spent pleading to God for mercy, we're told that during the night, the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision. God had answered their prayers. He revealed what neither King Nebuchadnezzar or his wise men, nor even Daniel and his friends themselves could have known or discovered, apart from the divine revelation of God by God. So if you were Daniel, what would your next move be? Your neck is in the noose. The executioner is ready to pull the lever, and suddenly you get information that the king wants. Information that will keep you from swinging at the end of the rope. What would you do? Wouldn't your first inclination be to run as fast as you could to tell the king the news? To let him know that you alone among all his magicians, astrologers, and wise men, that you alone were the one who has the answer he is seeking. Wouldn't you shout it from the gallows as loudly as you could? Wait, wait, I've got it. I know it. I have the answer you're looking for. Well, that would certainly be the response we'd expect from someone who had just come into possession of knowledge that would save their life. And no one would have given it a second thought if Daniel had done just that. But that's not what Daniel did. Daniel did something else first. First, he praised the God of heaven. Dr. Baruch Korman, a Jewish Christian and senior lecturer at the Zira Avraham Institute in Israel, reminds us that if we are to serve God faithfully, to live a pleasing life before him, the foundation for doing this is worshiping God. Never be too much in a hurry, he said, that you think you can't worship God, that you can't exalt his name, that you can't speak about his character and attributes. That's what worship is. And that's what Daniel did. Before rushing to King Nebuchadnezzar's side, Daniel rushed to the side of the King of creation and worshiped him. What about us? Is the first thing that comes to mind after our prayers are answered to give thanks and praise to God? Or do we simply go on about our business as usual? Not so, Daniel. And that's an important lesson we can learn from him. Before doing anything else on the heels of our prayers, whether God answers yes, no, or wait, let us first praise the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and power are his. That's what Daniel did. He praised the God who is in control of time and circumstances, who raises up leaders and casts them down, all according to the secret counsel of his will. Well, there's more to the story than we can cover today. But we'll pick up next week as the chess game between God and the devil, and between Daniel, Nebuchadnezzar, and his nervous wise men plays out. Don't miss it. It's a chess match for the ages. Amen.